All right, people, we all know the stakes of the 2024 election are high, whether it's keeping the Senate, taking back the House, or stopping Republicans at the state level. If you're ready to make a real difference, sign up for Vote Save America's 2024 volunteer program.
And just to make it interesting, we're pitting you against each other. Vote Save America will sort you onto a team, east or west, and you'll compete with a community of other volunteers to maximize your impact on the ground with opportunities tailored to you and the causes you care about.
The team with the highest volunteering staff could secure the biggest prize of all, the continuation of American democracy. Head to votesaveamerica.com/2024 now and get ready to organize or else.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com, and this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
And we're back. And let me tell you something. My knives, they're out.
Been out.
Knives been out.
The plays on just the title of Knives Out that have happened on Twitter, your Twitter and Hunter Harris's Twitter. There's like only two versions of it, but you guys keep finding new ways to state them.
Let me tell you, keep it or knives are out.
Right. They're not in.
They're out.
That's literally all of the jokes about them. And yet you inundate us.
You know what that's called? Talent.
I had other ideas.
Phenomenal. Anyway.
Love Knives Out. What a wonderful movie.
You went to see it.
Went to see it. I think I worship Rian Johnson now.
Rian Johnson is the moment.
Yeah, he's doing well. He's like the one, he's the honorary white man that I'm going to have to be like, oh, okay, you slipped on through. You're amazing.
I think this is my favorite movie of his. Even though, like, I wasn't a huge fan of Looper. I don't know what a Star Wars is, but
Laura Dern is in that film.
And I know where she allegedly can't stop herself from saying pew pew while she uses
pew, pew.
Weapons. But I will say about Knives Out, I kind of felt the ending of it didn't go the distance.
Watch your mouth.
I just want to say, like, to me, it's a movie that feels like Octavia Spencer as Ma should have been the killer. At the last moment. I don't know how we could have incorporated her, but I needed it to go to even a zanier place.
Okay.
I disagree.
Really?
I feel like at the very end when it was unraveling, it was a little too long, maybe, and that's my only critique of it. Like, I had a hard time keeping everything straight, but that just means it's rewatchable.
Right, because my favorite part is it really parodies the drawing room mystery reveal that happens in horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I thought that it kept building and building.
But, like Agatha Christie who? Excuse me? Never heard of her. Never heard that name.
I'll say this. I think the best performance in the movie, which not many people are talking about, is Christopher Plummer. As the
Which one is he?
He's the one who is murdered in the movie.
He's Harlan.
Oh.
The father.
He did kill it.
Yeah.
He's sweet, endearing, funny. I really like him in that
Real
movie.
Handsome.
Yeah.
He is very, very good.
But also, like, if you're Jamie Lee Curtis, what's going on in this movie? You didn't have enough to do. Besides wear a striking... you know, pantsuit, which I want her to do, but...
Toni Collette did the damn thing.
True, but the entire point of the mysteries, right? Like the Agatha Christie movies, etc. There are so many characters because you need so many suspects, and I think everyone just had a really fun time playing a wild character who maybe whodunit, you know? And I would rather those be played by fun actors who know what they're doing in a film than him casting it with a bunch of people who like aren't great.
No, I mean, yeah. I'm happy to see her, and I would be, if you had told me, well, she was taken out of the film, I would be very upset. But I want a little bit more Jamie Lee spiciness when I see Jamie Lee Curtis.
I get that.
You know,
I get that. I thought that Toni Collette was iconic in this film.
Her like languid-eyed kind of malaise about everything was pretty good. She did better as a ditz than I expected from her.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you know, Toni Collette is one of these obvious genius people. So
yeah.
I didn't think I would believe it.
Well, what I really also enjoyed was Daniel Craig singing a song from Follies in it.
What song?
Losing My Mind.
Oh my God.
The one he's singing in the car. I don't want to spoil too many things for people, but it was also a nod from Rian Johnson to The Last of Sheila, because he is a big mystery fan, and you know Last of Sheila, Lewis.
Oh, yes, which is co-written by Stephen Sondheim and Anthony
Perkins.
Mm-hmm. I don't love that movie, by the way, but...
I really enjoy it, and I it's weird to... I was talking... if you're a Sondheim fan, you know that at what point he was sort of like, should I stop writing musicals and just do whodunits? Because he loves whodunits and mysteries. And I thought that was a fun nod to him.
By the way, that's a specifically gay crisis of conscience. Should I give it all up to write whodunits? That's how you know. That's when you have to come out to your mom, when you're like, I could devote my entire life to things called the mirror cracked.
I mean, that's what happened with me and my mom at 15.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I said, Mom, let me tell you something about the ladies in my life. They vanish.
Mm. Now, here's a whodunit. Who concussed you at a young age? Because the effects are still with us.
Well, I actually was hit by a VOS as a child.
What?
It fell on me from the television as I was watching Price is Right.
Really?
Like shaking the television in excitement?
I was reaching for something, and it slid back and hit me, and it's why I have a scar on my face to this day.
Wow. Wait, a game show-related injury in your... Is it possible I did it and that I'm happy for me?
Wow. Aida, you're the detective who was hired to be here.
Wow. Shame, Shemaine. I'm really trying to do the Daniel Craig. I think it's a Creole accent. Is that what it is? Oh, my God, I'm turning into Ira. Oh, no.
Some friend of mine pointed out that that role normally would be played by Kevin Spacey, for sure. But we are done with Kevin Spacey, obviously. So now it's Daniel Craig.
Are we?
You never know. Again, cancellation, an ongoing process.
I'm still holding out for American Beauty, too.
Oh, God. Yeah, please.
Still Beauty.
K-Pax, too?
Still Beauty.
Beauty harder. Anyway, should we get this show started?
Oh, I guess.
All right. We will be joined today by Sophia Bush.
Whom I love. I met randomly one day and was delighted with every second of it.
Brooke Ben-Davis. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about that. And also, we're going to talk about the maybe feud between Dakota Johnson and Ellen DeGeneres.
Disturbing how exciting this was for me.
The knives were out.
If you will.
And we're going to talk about Gabrielle Union's exit from America's Got Talent.
Oh, Lord.
It's the best show on television. It's a shame it had to go down like this.
I have a lot of questions about this. Mostly, I don't think America does have that much talent.
Right. It comes down to a question, ultimately.
Yeah. Talent for genocide. Right.
That's more of an affinity.
We'll be right back. NBC, you got some splitting to do.
Can you do that accent?
Probably not.
I could say, I don't feel wonderful about it.
Like politically or you mean physically?
A little bit of both.
Probably.
Okay.
I'm just doing Ricky Ricardo.
On the first episode of Keep It, I made a joke about we had, whatever, Prosecco with us. And I sipped it and I said, oh, I'm getting drunk in the afternoon like Desi or Naz. That reference always plays. Anyway, just to let you know.
He did love getting drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Woo. He's also a little scary.
The knives and the bottles were out.
That was my first feminist moment. Okay, we'll get to the topic in a second. My mom, I would watch I Love Lucy, and my mom would go, how about in every episode the women are so stupid, and then the men get to call them stupid? I was like, oh yeah, right.
A big awakening moment for you.
Yeah, and now I am the person I am.
But also, how about in every episode, they never had plots?
Oh,
Fred and Ricky doing? Who gave a fuck?
No, Fred just had nothing to do. Tuck his shirt into his pants? I had no idea what he was doing all day.
Just sitting at home waiting to vote for Trump.
Right.
but getting back to NBC, over the weekend, SAG-AFTRA, I love my union, launched an investigation into America's Got Talent following NBC's announcement that both Gabrielle Union and fellow judge Julianne Hough would be leaving the show after one season. Gabrielle and her husband, in particular, Dwayne Wade, have been very vocal about her departure not being an amicable one.
Mm.
Sheesh. This is no good. This is very... Anything Gabrielle Union does, I will support her because she's a black girl from Nebraska, which I just recently found out, actually.
Oh, she's a Nebraskan.
She's a Nebraskan. That's it.
I'm okay with calling Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union the king and queen of social media. I just enjoy what they do.
I love them. As an aside, I just want to point out how wonderful they've been to their son, Zion Wade. And I know that that sounds sort of like bare minimum asking, oh, thank you for being wonderful to your queer son who is just outwardly expressing himself, whatever his identity may turn out to be when he gets older. It is just nice seeing a prominent black mother and a prominent black father who is a former basketball player, you know, like one of the most masculine professions you can have, just supporting his son in a way that many fathers, any race,
yeah,
don't do.
But, you know, especially in the black community, it is, you're entirely right, to see such a big figurehead like him, someone who's worth millions and millions and millions of dollars, who a lot of black men look up to, unabashedly supporting his queer son, like we said.
And then back to the story, I love how vocal he's being in supporting his wife in this incident, which has so many layers of mess
such
to
a
it.
Good couple.
So let's first get into the incident starting the firing, which include Jay Leno appearing as a guest on the show. Lewis's favorite comedian.
It's where I learned everything
Your
I know.
Your source code.
My denim-shirted humor.
According to Variety, while taping, Leno made a joke about a painting in the studio's hallway of Simon Cowell surrounded by his dogs, saying the dogs looked like something you'd see on the menu at a Korean restaurant. Well, Shane Gillis got fired from SNL and apparently went to do punch-up jokes for Jay Leno.
What in the Miss Swan type of entertainment behavior is this?
It's definitely a joke you make when your whole brand peaked in 1996.
Exactly.
After this, Gabrielle urged the producers to report the joke to HR. Many people on the staff found it offensive, including one of the show's very few Asian staffers.
That's a quote.
That is a pointed quote. It didn't get reported, but the line was cut from the episode when it aired on August 6th.
Well, phew. I mean, God, I can't believe we had to miss out on that wonderful, informative joke.
Right.
Jay Leno always teaching is how I feel about him.
Truly. Then there were also multiple reports of Gabrielle being told that her rotating hairstyles were, quote, too black for the audience of America's Got Talent.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. That is so offensive. That is ridiculously offensive. And especially because as black women, we have to wear different protective styles to keep our hair healthy because it is so... Our hair requires so much upkeep, you know, the braids, all the twists, all the things that we do. It's not even always to make it look good. It's to keep it down and keep it out of the way. So this is so racially... That's Oh, my God. I can't even process that.
But at the
so
same
bad.
Time, keep it down, Aida. I mean, like, God, it's so annoying to the rest of us. I can't even watch a television if the hair changes on it.
How dare you?
What an insane thing to tell a human being.
Yeah.
Also, too black. Too black.
What does that mean?
I notice she is black, so I feel like those things go hand in hand.
You know, if she wears her hair a different way, the audience might be reminded that she's black, though. Because I don't think... you realize how you have to do specifically black things to remind an audience you're black. Case in point, after Single Ladies, people thought Beyoncé was just a fun white woman making bops, right? And then Formation happened, and people were like,
they went underground.
Wait a second. In one of the wildest stories, actually, Gabrielle apparently expressed concern about one white male performer on the show, whose act involved impersonations of famous singers. And at one point, this person portrayed the aforementioned Beyoncé, and part of his costume was coloring his hands black.
What is going on at America's Got Talent? What is happening?
America's got a shitty history. I mean, it's what's going on here.
This is nuts, right? It's nuts.
No, this is wild. America's got to stop. That's what needs to happen. The show needs to stop.
I mean, I hate to say I'm curious, but what the hell could the act possibly be? Sorry, nobody send in ideas. I have no idea what happened there.
Well, the studio audience apparently saw it, but it was removed from the show.
And Gabrielle was rightfully pissed off about that, too. Why should that person get to perform that for anybody? Somebody has a camera drawn, whatever, it can get out.
There have been other reports. One of them was that Gabrielle apparently had to tell producer of the show, Simon Cowell, to stop chain smoking indoors.
He also needs to stop wearing those goddamn Henleys, of course.
There's a lot he needs to stop doing.
The Henley peddler himself.
Wearing Henleys should also be illegal, just like smoking indoors is. Like,
right.
How is it even a problem that she complains about something that is an actual violation in her workplace? You know, and that smoke gets everywhere. Like, I think everything Gabrielle's saying has been so justified, and it's just a reminder to the fact that nobody's listening to black women, even when they are correct. Like, they're speaking facts about the situation, and it's like, oh, no, shut your... black ass up. You know, like, there's no reason for this.
And there's also, it's, I'm sure, that very familiar to POC, certainly familiar to queer people thing of, you're on a job, you're the deep minority there, mm-hmm. and then you feel self-assigned to police situations.
Well, Howie Mandel's also a minority. He's quite literally just a UFO, right. I'm pretty sure. So,
who, by the way, will never be fired, I guess. Can I just say something about Howie Mandel? How many people under the age of, I'll go 35, I'll ask you, Aida, do you know why Howie Mandel is famous?
I only know this because I'm a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
And then I know about Deal or No Deal.
Right.
But that's it.
Right. No, he was a wild, lewd stand-up in the 80s.
Which I've never seen.
Right. He would blow up a latex glove and put it on his head. And like in a cartoonish kind of psychotic voice say things like, I have a boner. That was the comedy then. Happy 1981. He was a voice on Muppet Babies. He did a show called Bobby's World. And he was on a drama called St. Elsewhere. Mm. Okay, that leads us to about 1989. It is 2019, and we just let him hang out and pretend like he's a relevant person who should be judging talent.
For us, Lewis, I feel like Howie Mandel, if you're not a comedian connoisseur,
yeah,
you probably recognize him the most from those weird series of commercials he always did in the 90s.
Right, right.
For like Boston Pizza and other shit. I feel like Terry Hatcher was in one with him.
And where is she? Not on a panel making millions of dollars a year. You know what I'm saying?
But you're right. Howie's been on that show for like 10 years. I feel like he's been there for consecutive seasons. And it just feels like they recycle women out. Like they're like, oh, here's a new woman. Here, she's even younger than the last one.
Right. And Howard Stern has said as much, former America's Got Talent. Judge Howard Stern, who basically said Simon exchanges the women and keeps the men, no matter, these are his words, how ugly they are, which is
a phrasing
I appreciate, weirdly, from Howard Stern.
Right. Who would have expected that Howard Stern would come to Gabrielle Union's defense?
Yeah, right.
When Howard Stern is dragging you, Simon, let's give it up.
Yeah.
I would also point out the whack solidarity she's gotten from some people who should be a bit more in her corner. Let's talk about Julianne Hough.
What'd she say?
Well, first of all, her statement to Variety denied the fact that she had received constant criticism on her hair, makeup, and wardrobe as well. And she said, I had a wonderful time on America's Got Talent. I loved working with the cast, crew, and producers. I am happy to continue my working relationship with NBC. She also expressed excitement for two upcoming NBC shows she'll be featured in, Holiday with the Huffs, co-starring her brother Derek, and Christmas in Rockefeller Center in December. I'm looking forward to what the future holds. You're looking forward to protecting that bag, Sam.
Yes, and your relationship.
Nothing happened to me on this NBC show. By the way, I have two more NBC shows coming out.
Oh, my God. This traitor stick of margarine, Julianne Hough. Here's some reasons also to be mad at Julianne Hough.
Her blackface?
There was that.
Which she went as Crazy Eyes for Halloween?
Never forget. But also never forget the Rock of Ages movie, which I believe is the worst movie I saw this decade. Did you see that?
Yes.
Catherine Zeta, forgive me. I thought you did a great job. Everybody else,
Mary J. Blige.
Everybody else, get to Nuremberg.
Mary J. Blige did what she had to do in that movie.
Which was that one scene where she sang some hair ballad.
Yeah.
So that, the Footloose remake, starring Julianne Hough and my favorite movie star, Kenny Wormald.
I didn't mind the Footloose remake.
I was going to say, that was
Miles
my first Teller,
time. I thought, slayed in that movie. Mm-hmm.
Miles Teller is amazing in everything he's ever done.
I agree. Whiplash, top 10 for the decade for me.
Although, Footloose, the movie remake, is one of those weird movies where they remake a movie that's very culturally white and include black people in it, and then it doesn't make sense for any of these black people to be in it, because the movie Footloose is based on a preacher banning dance.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that flies in a city with that many black people in it in the remake of it.
Wow. That movie needed a dramaturg. You're right. Good
it
call.
It truly did.
Mm-hmm. And then also, just Julianne Hough is somebody we've invested in as a star time and time again.
Grease? She was in Grease?
Oh, yes. She was okay in Grease.
Yeah. She was not that great opposite Vanessa Hudgens, who slayed, although I now have to take my sneakers off. No more sneaker night, because Vanessa Hudgens said she would love to do a movie with Woody Allen.
She did.
She did say that.
Let me just remind people that Sneaker Night is an actual single by Vanessa Hudgens.
A beautiful song, too. Wonderfully constructed.
Which has the poet laureate winning lyrics of 1984. Basically, what we're going to do is dance. Basically, what we're going to do is dance. It will come easily. when you hear the beat.
I think that counts as haiku. It's a few syllables long, but we can retract.
We took a little break for Thanksgiving, and we completely missed that Vanessa thing. Mm-hmm. We completely missed Miss Scarlett Johansson doing an interview where she defended Woody Allen again, too.
Right. They're what friends, is guys. They're friends.
I don't
friends.
Get it. This man is near death. They were Why do we have to keep defending him? Stop.
Slow news week.
Stop.
Let me throw out all my Woody Allen defenses.
Right. Guys, you... Scarlett Johansson, I know you saw Wonder Wheel. We are done with Woody Allen, just on a substance level. You don't have to keep caping.
A special extra early keep it to Marvel for the Black Widow trailer, which just came out, which features Florence Pugh in it, and Rachel Weisz. So clearly I'm going to be seeing this movie. Lastly, I would just say that another person who disappointed me was Terry Crews, who seems to have lost all of the activism that was brewing up in him when he was on the other side of it. Because he tweeted to Gabrielle, "You're the best, Gabrielle. You will be missed."
Wow.
What a have a nice summer of tweets.
I would say, what a Kirstie Alley, Stephen Hawking obit. Thanks for your input. Guys, look up that tweet.
You
it's
know, I don't think
tweet.
I sense the snark in that. Is there? Do you feel it?
Well, there's not snark, but it's "you're the best, Gabrielle. You will be missed," which is just
there's lack of solidarity.
It's lame.
Yeah,
it's so bare minimum. Especially since during Terry's assault incident, she tweeted, "Terry Crews is a stand-up guy, literally one of the nicest people in our industry. He is honest, kind, and a true professional. I believe him and stand by him. Hashtag Me Too." And he even gave an interview where he talked about how while some black men met his story with ridicule and judgment, he says that black women supported him the most after his sexual assault.
Of course we did.
Yeah, so seeing that bare minimum tweet to Gabrielle, it was like, why even bother?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the way, always remember Gabrielle Union, the time she was asked about Stacey Dash, and she responded with fake incredulity, and she said, "You mean Damon Dash?" And then they went on a comic monologue that seemed entirely improvised. Mm-hmm. That's Slade.
She is so very funny.
She's
celebrities
hilarious.
Who give you quotes, always be appreciating, please.
For more anecdotes like that, you should read We're Going to Need More Wine, her memoir, which is hilarious too and actually very poignant. And I just hope that this thing gets resolved in a good way.
Sure.
Yeah. Get your money. Get your bag, Gabrielle. Get SAG to get you your money for being fired.
By the way, before we wrap this up, isn't it crazy to think Simon Cowell is still doing this damn thing? Mm-hmm. I think of him as like a celebrity who peaked in the 2000s, and we all appreciated his, you know, anger and snarkiness then, but it goes on. He continues to do the exact same thing, and we're just sort of, you know, over it, but I'm sure he's making 9 figures a year or something.
And do the winners of those shows even go on to have careers anymore? Are we at the point where we're supporting them?
Oh, God, no.
I can't think of anyone.
I don't know what you win for America's Got Talent.
Mm-mm. If anything, you go down a couple ranks.
Yeah.
No.
Remember, you get your visa.
America's still hurting from when we tried X Factor all those years ago. Guys, it's not for us.
It's not for us.
It's still on.
I know. Well, I mean, that in Britain, they have.
Yes.
That makes sense. They love loud things.
Yes. They just got a Pussycat Dolls reunion.
Right. Oh, God, I'm so jealous of that. Did you guys know that the Pussycat Dolls have never released a bad single?
Never.
It's really crazy.
And the best? Beep.
Buttons.
Buttons. Oh, I think Buttons does top Beep, though Beep is funnier. Wow.
Yeah. It's funny how a man only thinks about the
ding.
Do you remember when Danity Kane tried to do what Pussycat Dolls did?
And they didn't.
Okay, well, you know what? We're going to end this segment because I will not take any Danity Kane slander.
They have one good song. Thank you so much for playing yet again. I think the best Pussycat Dolls song, though, is I Hate This Part. I love a ballad that's also danceable. Mm. Sam Smith finally discovered that. You know what I'm saying? Stick in that lane.
Well, stick with us. We'll be right back with Sophia Bush.
Keep It is brought to you by Hinge. Hinge is the dating app designed
to be deleted.
If you're really good at it, that is. I've actually met several really good friends through Hinge. I've used it, I can't believe this, over a decade now. Woof, what a life I've had.
Well, you know what they've added within a decade of us being on Hinge is their new LGBTQIA plus prompts, which are designed to help queer daters better connect based on similarities, interests, and compatibility.
Hinge prompts helps you show off your full personality and connect with someone who appreciates you. Plus, these prompts were created in collaboration with GLAAD, so they are by the people, for the people. Some of the prompts are, the first time I knew I was gay was, I was literally in the act of being gay, like hooking up with somebody when I admitted it. Denial is strong and hard in the Catholic Midwest.
Mine was Tom Cruise's Vanity Fair cover, the shirtless one.
You just turned to an imaginary camera and said, I'm gay.
Yeah, or broke the fourth wall.
You're like Fleabag. Other prompts include, I feel proudest of who I am when, it feels affirming when others, blank, I connect to my community by, I wish I could tell the younger version of myself. I'm going to say, whenever I watch that in a Drag Race semifinal, when they're like, if I could talk to my younger self, I would say, I would be like, girl, get tighter clothes. I mean, what's going on with what you're wearing? You look like you're in the X Games. Other prompts include, my chosen family is the best at, and gender euphoria looks like. Download Hinge and show off your full self using their LGBTQIA plus prompts today. Then find someone worth deleting the app for.
Keep It is brought to you by Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop.
The early 2000s was a wild time for reality TV. I was there. I remember. There seemed to be an endless supply of shows that delivered entertainment for us, but trauma for children, like Dance Moms, the infamous Lifetime Network show where the studio owner screamed at children and their moms over several seasons. On each episode of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop, comedians join host Misha Brown to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time and try to answer the age-old question, who thought this was a good idea?
They recently looked behind the scenes of what was really going on at Abby Lee Miller's dance studio. Well, we know that someone created the beast known as JoJo Siwa.
You think we see the lab workings that created JoJo Siwa?
Yeah.
One pigtail, two pigtails.
And Chemical X. Abby's biggest misstep actually wasn't screaming nonsensical catchphrases or throwing chairs on television, but instead, she was choreographing financial fraud in plain sight.
Well, follow The Big Flop wherever you get your podcasts.
Guys, it's been a rough year. It's going to get rougher, and you deserve a little treat for not going insane yet. You could head to the local tiki bar and tell the bartender, do your worst. But we have a better idea for you, which is pick out something from the Crooked Store. The store is stocked with tons of new merch. It's perfect for the spring. And classics like the Friend of the Pod tees that you'll be wearing long after the next administration or the next fascist dictatorship, depending on how things go. Pick up a new tee for the warm weather ahead, a mug that'll remind you to stay involved this election year, or a hat celebrating your favorite pod. Go to crooked.com/store to shop.
Lewis and I are delighted to be sitting down with Sophia Bush. Hello.
Good morning.
You're such a pleasure. I just want to see you walk into a room and it's like, va-va-voom. Like, I love her. She's so full
you.
Of life.
I'm just relieved that you all like to hug as much as I do, because otherwise it would be awkward.
Oh, yeah. No. And by the way, I'm generally speaking cold in German, so it's lucky that, but you inspire me. So
thank you.
Yeah.
I try.
We call him Lewis Das Boot. But before we get to the niceties, I have some questions.
Go right ahead.
You started your new podcast.
I did.
Work in progress.
Yes.
What made you want to jump into the game and go against Keep It?
I mean, I never want to go against you. I consider us to be comrades in arms, you know. I have always been so, firstly, curious. And second, I love to have really deep conversations. I love to ask questions, and I love people to ask questions of me. And it's funny, I was just listening, Krista Tippett interviewed Jericho Brown, and he was talking about how he loves to tell people that he's a poet, because people freak out because they're like, oh, you want to ask all those deep questions and shit about life and you think that's fun? I'm like, same, except I'm not a brilliant poet, sad, but I am a podcaster now. So it's a place to ask questions and have, I think, really interesting conversations. And for me to put the journalism degree that I was working on in college before I dropped out for a TV show. Whoops. Sorry, Mom.
I dropped my journalism degree.
Did you?
To do theater.
Oh, see, I left the theater program, was doing a journalism degree, and then actually left to act. So,
do you know what's even sadder? I completed my journalism degree.
Well,
guys, what am I doing with it now?
Well, we're doing podcasts is what we're doing.
I know, right?
And they're amazing. Like, I love this space to be able to just talk and get in it. And for me, you know, I use my Instagram like a news channel. It just gives me a longer form way to have these conversations and to welcome audiences in. For all of us, I look at these tables as a way to spend privilege, because not everybody gets to sit across from the people that we get to sit across from, but we can offer that space to anyone who's curious or wants to learn. So,
speaking of one of those people, I have never sat across from Jon Favreau because he is banned from Keep It.
Persona non grata.
Persona non grata.
What did he do? Did he shit on your floor like a Johnny Depp?
No, he hit me with his car.
No, he did not.
You know, he's a villain. He's just a Melrose Place villain.
Wait, what do you mean he hit you with his car?
I mean...
accidentally?
I mean, I think he tried to kill me.
This is a long-running bit that is not slowing anytime soon. I'm sorry we used you as a forum for
it. You know what? I kind of love it. I'm here for a bit. It's like, it's my job. In the world of acting, as you know, because you went into theater, like, you do improv, the rule is yes and.
Right.
Like, no matter what anybody throws at you, you're like, yes, and then this. You gotta support your people. So, like,
but in the case of Ira, no stop enabling is also an acceptable venue. Now, okay, the guests you've had on your podcast are illustrious and lovely. You've had some people we've had on, like Chelsea Handler, but you had one of my favorite actors ever, who I think always gives great interviews, is Henry Winkler.
Do you just die for him?
He's just the sweetest man.
He's
from Milwaukee.
He's the nicest, kindest man.
So there's a big Henry Winkler statue celebrating Happy Days.
Oh my God. Why? And also, that's so cute.
Yeah, because Happy Days was set there.
Wow.
Yeah.
The Fonz, man.
So when you meet these people, like, what are you most curious about? Because you are an actor, so I assume most of the profession is unmasked to you already.
I mean, yes and no. I'm so fascinated by how everyone has such different process. And like with someone like a Chelsea, she's a comedian. You know, I don't do stand-up. I'm obsessed with it. I'm so curious about it. Part of me feels like I'd love to try it, but it's also like I'd love to try hot yoga, and I don't do that either. So we'll see. I think in my own profession, it's interesting to talk to people about, you know, how they got where they are, what they believe in, what makes them tick. And then when I interview people who I just am so enamored with in the sort of political arena, whether it's a, you know, a Gloria Steinem or an Evan McMullen or a Senator Gillibrand, it's like, I want to talk to these people about what it means to, you know, find your calling and to be in public service and to run for office and all of this or to be a political activist or an activist journalist. It's like, no matter what, I think that the commonality for all of these guests I've interviewed so far is that they have incredible perspective and a story to tell, whether it's with humor or really sort of serious data science. We need all those people and we need all their stories. Why do you do this?
I do it because I think it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
I love nothing more than being part of the conversation.
Yeah.
What my friends and I are talking about off pod, I want to have that conversation with other people, because I think that it's, one, conversations we should be having, and two, the space is full of not voices like mine, or voices like Lewis, or voices like Aida, our other co-host. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that it's a great way to just sort of push information out there without feeling like it's an article, without feeling like it's definitive. We're allowed to disagree with each other, and I think it's a good debate.
Unfortunately, I'd be discussing this stuff anyway, so it's like, you may as well record me.
Same.
I also sort of feel like, unfortunately, my profession is writing, but I think I am better at talking. So it's this weird indulgence on my part, you know, like, oh, I get to be the shock jock I always have dreamed I could have been.
I love that. And I do love the fact that on a podcast, you can really have a dialogue. You can debate. It's not all so make a decision, have an opinion, write it in, you know, carve it in stone. It's like, I like being able to get into things and have conversations with people who think differently than I do, in addition to people who agree with me. It's like, it's really good for us, I think.
I like that every once in a while. I mean, like, sometimes I just don't need to meet difference of opinion. Like, don't be wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've done a lot of work to be right over here. But, yeah. But I see what you mean.
Let's talk a bit about a thing I'm very excited to talk to you about. Alrighty. How we first came to know you.
Yes.
You know, Miss Brooke Davis.
Yeah.
The queen of One Tree Hill. Okay? I mean, I hated most every other character. Oh my God. Who wasn't you.
Well, that's very kind.
Certainly Lucas.
Oh, no. You had hate.
Yeah, I was never here for Lucas.
Okay.
I liked you.
Rogue opinion.
I liked you, and I liked Dan.
Yeah.
He was evil, but...
But Dan Scott was the best. How hard did we all cry when he died? I mean, come on.
Yeah. How hard did we laugh when his heart was eaten by a dog?
There was a moment where we were filming that, and I was like, we've been on for too long. This show has just been on for too long. This is jumping the shark.
Right. It started as...
To bring back the Fonz.
You know what I mean?
It started as a nice show about two brothers who... Who were arch enemies,
yeah.
You know? And they were on the same basketball team. And it seemed like it was a teen show that was going to be a bit more introspective, you know, very emotional. And I love how it shifted into Teen Melrose Place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, don't they all?
Also, do you remember when the show first started getting that sort of attention? Like, when it was featured on The Soup all the time?
God, kind of, maybe.
Yeah, I feel like that's when people started talking about the show as like, oh, yeah. This is wild.
Yeah, it got a little wild. I think the writers just really were having some fun, and I don't know. I mean, it did start as this sort of introspective thing, but also the irony. So, out of all the cast members, I did the most episodes. I did 186 of 187 episodes of One Tree Hill. I mean, that's a lot of TV.
Good ratio.
And yeah. I was the one who wasn't in the pilot. And we worked with this producer, Joe DiVola, who, if you were a Seinfeld fan, you know Crazy Joe DiVola. Well, Crazy Joe DiVola comes from real Joe DiVola, who's fucking Joe DiVola, because it's his favorite word, and he literally inserts it like every three words in every sentence. I had done a different pilot that year for the same production company. Our pilot didn't get picked up, thankfully.
What was this show about?
It was like a family drama, but it would have been sort of like a Seventh Heaven kind of, which like I loved, but also I would have had to be this like rebellious kid in a household getting yelled at by their parents all the time, and One Tree Hill was way more fun to film. And so Joe DiVola, I get a call and he's like, all these fucking characters on this show make you want to fucking kill yourself. We need somebody to come in here and be funny and stir the pot. We're adding a new kid. You got to come in and read for it. And I was like, okay, who are you? What? Are you my boss? Like, but he was like at the company. It was so weird. You know, I was 21. I didn't know what I was doing. So I was like, sure. Okay. So yeah, I went in and I read for Brooke Davis, and the rest is history.
How was that as a formative TV making experience? Do you still think of it as sort of the peak of your experience in TV? You've been on so many shows since then.
I don't think of it as the peak. Every experience is different. Every show you're on is kind of like a relationship you've been in, you know? And like some relationships are better than others, but you stay in relationships generally for a reason. I think there are still things I'm so excited to do, you know, things I'm developing and stories that I want to tell. And I don't know. I don't think of it in terms like that, but... It was such an amazing experience, and you know, as the adage goes, it was the best of times and the worst of times. It's so easy for us. We were all at my friend Hillary's wedding, my coworker who played Peyton, and we were talking about how now we've had enough years where we just look at it and we love it.
Yeah.
But like, run into any of us on the street in season 7, and we were like ready to pull our hair out. You know? That's just the reality of things. But yeah, a lot of it was really fun and amazing and ridiculous, and some of it was horrible. And we're really glad there were no like behind the scenes crews.
That's always something that's interesting to me. I think people kind of don't understand what happens when like a TV show sort of congeals and people are over it. Because it just seems like the most ideal job on earth. Like, how could somebody be over it? You know, how could somebody be sick? What do you think happens on a TV show?
Well, I don't even think it's just what happens. I think it's the actual job. Like, people don't understand that making TV is hard. When you watch an episode of television, it's amazing because it was edited by professionals and it has a soundtrack. And you're like, whoa, swelling, inspiring. When you're on set, there's no air or heat running because it screws up the sound. There's no music. Everyone's working 16 to 18 hours a day and tired and cranky. And like, it's hard work. and nobody wants to hear you complain about it. But something that put it in perspective for me when I was working on my show in Chicago, my technical advisor is like a 30-year undercover Chicago cop and was like, this is the hardest shit I have ever done in my life. Mm. Like, how do you do this? And then you memorize 10 pages of lines a day? Like, what's happening here? And I was like, oh, wow, that's an interesting thing to have you say to me. I wouldn't have pegged that. But yeah, it is, the work is actually very tedious and requires a lot of sacrifice. And like, you miss every birthday and every mom's, you know, Mother's Day and every baby being born and whatever. So you have to love what you do. But that's also why I think it can get kind of grating. And when you're many years into a show and, you know, you read a script and you find out that a dog is going to eat a heart and you're just like, what am I doing? What have I done
right.
with my life?
Yeah, it's your whole life. It's so much of your day.
You're like,
yeah.
What have I done with my life?
Or people
then,
are being chased through a cornfield by
yes,
a nurse
like
with
it's
an axe.
Like, in an outfit. Like, it's crazy. You know, sweet Tori. But it's like, now we look back on it. And, like, the dog in the heart is such a classic moment that people want to reference. And you're like, it's kind of a cult classic, whatever. I'm cool with it.
Speaking about still loving the job, you know, did you brought up working on Chicago PD. Mm. Did you have a moment after, you know, you left the show and you talked about, you know, working in a toxic work environment. Mm-hmm. Did you have a moment where you were like, is this what I still want to be doing? Or were you able to contextualize it within the situation and be like, this was just this particular show?
I mean, it definitely was that particular show. Mm-hmm. You know, we had an unpleasant experience as women on the set of One Tree Hill because our boss was just a pervert and like gross. But the experience I had in Chicago made One Tree Hill look like child's play. Mm-hmm. In a way, you have context to understand what's different. You know, I was very lucky to work for Max Muchnick and David Cohan, the Will and Grace creators, for a season of a sitcom that we did together. And that was like a dream job. I went into work every day with Jimmy Burrows and Michael Urie and laughed my ass off, and it was a gift. Mm-hmm. And I've had jobs that are such gifts. Like, I just shot a movie with Alana Glazer that she wrote, and like, it's dark. Yet it was like a party for us every day in making that stuff come alive. And it was her set, and it was run very differently. The pilot that I produced last year was run so differently and was a dream. And so, yes, it's very clear to me that it was that job. But what I've noticed since is that when I walk onto sets where I'm not necessarily in control, mm-hmm. or I don't know everybody, I'm very different than I used to be. Mm-hmm. I'm not like the bubbly, effusive, like, hey, what's up, everybody? I walk in, I meet people, I sit in the corner, I observe. Mm-hmm. I want to know who in the room might be bad news, mm-hmm. so that I know who to avoid. And that's a new thing for me. And it's kind of sad, but mm-hmm. also I just refuse to give my power away to anybody. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, no, I'm going to do my job. I'm just maybe going to observe a little bit differently, and that's okay.
And you feel that that's manageable. Like, you can walk into a situation like that and think, this will still be worthwhile for me.
Depends on the situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there have been things that I have been up for that, because of things I know, I've been like, I'm not even going to go in for that.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to take a meeting on that. I don't ever want to work with that person or that. Like, there are just, I have different parameters now. It's kind of unfortunate that people have to do that. And you know, you see it happening over and over again. One of my coworkers on One Tree Hill had it really bad with our boss, and she didn't work for many years after that show because she didn't feel safe on a set. Mm. And I didn't go straight back to work after being in Chicago because I really just felt uncomfortable mm-hmm. on a set. And a set is supposed to be my playground. I had to do some readjusting for that. But again, I'm just unwilling to give it up. And I know that when you walk into a space and you like stand in your integrity, and you also have like a little bit of Brooke Davis, I mean, let's be real, I built her. I'm like, I'll burn your fucking house down. So, you know, I want it to be great. And I analyze it a little bit differently since, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting too is that a lot of that happened really before the mm-hmm. Me Too reckoning that really rose up in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And did you find that your interactions with people within the industry might have been a little different pre that happening? You know, like after you had the Chicago PD incident, did you feel that some producers were maybe like, oh, well, now we can't work with her because she seems like she is speaking out. You know, before now it seems like we're encouraging people to speak out.
Seems like, yes.
Seems like.
Yeah, seems like. I'm like, show me any real evidence that this has ever been good for anyone to stand up to them for themselves anywhere. I mean, look what just happened to Gab Union.
Yeah,
You know, like she
stood up. Yeah, we just talked about that.
Yeah, like when a black woman is working on a set and is told that her hairstyles are too black for network TV, like, excuse me? Mm-hmm. Excuse me? And you're going to tell her she doesn't have the right to complain about that rather than, I don't know, fire the person making those remarks to her? Like, just shows you that the system is still backwards and that women who stand up for themselves are still punished. But I think that the more of us who do it and the more of us who talk about it and the more of us who are open about it, the more the system's going to have to change more quickly. Mm-hmm. I understand that those things don't happen overnight, but they should have happened a long time ago. And I know at least for me, it took me about a year to get out of my contract because when you sign a TV deal, they own you. Like, they own you for 6 years. And I left at the end of season four. So that took a lot of work. For me, when that happened, I left at the end of April and the Harvey story and Me Too as a big sort of public movement broke in July. So it was very interesting because I was alone. And then suddenly things started to change. And I realized there were people who knew, you know, when the Time's Up letter was being drafted, I was one of the first people they called to sign it. And they said, like, we know what's up. And I thought, okay, this is good. But it's interesting that as open about my experiences and all of the incidents that I was put through as I've been, you know, I had a conversation with Dax about it on his podcast. And people were like, well, now she's making claims. I was like, do you think that I can't just go back and screenshot all my tweets and my Instagram posts about this? Do you think, like, just if you weren't paying attention doesn't mean I wasn't talking about it. And I remember even, you know, when I think back to my first, you know, because they make you go through on a show, and I'm sure they do this in writers' rooms, where you have the sexual harassment talk.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we went through our sexual harassment talk, our first season in Chicago, and the NBC HR person comes and gives you the talk. And they tell the story of a woman who was a writer on Friends who felt like she was being targeted by really sexually explicit jokes in the writer's room. Mm-hmm. So she sued for harassment, and the network beat her lawsuit, claiming that the writer's room has to be this free space for inappropriate jokes to be made to find comedy. And I was like, this is the talk you're giving us before you tell us that if we're experiencing harassment, we should report it to you guys?
Yeah.
You're telling us about how you, like, be down. Okay, you know.
You could use that for justification for anything, by the way. You know, it's like, well, we're making a gritty drama here. You obviously need to hear coarse jokes because the world is tough or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so stupid.
And it's hard to engage with that. You know, we had just had Lizzie Kaplan on the show, and she talked about how filming Masters of Sex was a different environment, and things, the set would probably be different now, but, you know, that was a show about sexuality and it had a lot of nudity and sex scenes, and it's like, how do you engage with that in a respectful way?
Yes, in a respectful manner. And I think that's what's important, and I think it's the reason that so many of us in my lane are talking about having a person on set whose job it is to oversee just that, whether that person is a trained psychologist or a sex expert or something, someone on set who can help navigate that situation. Because, you know, it's weird when you have to just work with all these people and their quirks and their things. You know, you don't know them. You don't know who people are going in. And you don't know if you're going to end up in the dream writer's room or a toxic writer's room. And I will never forget when we sort of circled the wagons after Me Too broke, and two of the female writers on One Tree Hill had talked about their experiences with Mark Schwann. One of the women talked about how she had bent over, sitting on the couch, like bent to, I think, like retie her shoe or pick something, I don't remember. And he put a soda can on the back of her head and was like, wait, see if it'll balance. And when she like held still and was like, okay, I don't want to drop it. He was like, you know, look at that, like back of your head's flat, and made some crass joke about essentially how she could probably hold a beer for a guy while giving a blowjob. Mm. And it's like, that's disgusting, inappropriate. You probably shouldn't have touched her in the first place, but that's the joke you're going to make to a woman who you employ when you are her boss. Also, what does your wife think of that?
Every like, that single part about to, that is disgusting.
That you talk to the women you employ like this. And I remember the guys in the room just being like, we never knew what to say. Because if we'd step in, he'd be like, oh, get a sense of humor. Or he'd throw out a thing like, do you like having a job? You know, some sort of threat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how do you know if you're going to end up in a writer's room like yours or a writer's room like his?
Mm-hmm.
truly, what could be worse than that situation? I mean, I'm sure the answer is there are plenty of versions of worseness, but that is just so horrifying.
It's just awful. Yeah. It's awful. And yet it gets normalized, because what was happening to me in Chicago was so normalized by everyone around me, because people were afraid to upset the system that keeps the show going. And when I started talking to people who had nothing to do with the show and telling them what was going on, I mean, the look of horror on people's faces, just being like, have you called the police? Have you, like, that kind of response. And I was going, oh, okay, so I'm not crazy. This really isn't normal. But there's something about these environments where the environment itself is the package. Like, it gets built into this ship that has to move forward. And so nobody wants to disrupt it.
Right.
And I think that I'm curious to see how we start creating change in systems mm-hmm. where things can be fixed without people feeling like they're a threat to the system. Because mm-hmm. I think that's why so many people are afraid to really rally or stand up or do something. And my hope is that now some of that is changing. Even Gab being able to talk so frankly about what's going on for her right now, I don't think that would have happened a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But I also don't see it helping her yet. Mm-hmm. I think it helps a cause, but I know that a lot of us are really sick of, like, being a martyr for the cause.
Right, it's having, like, to feel like you're staging a coup when you're in fact just speaking up for common sense or decency or whatever.
I'm like, let's just make this a nice place to work for everyone.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Sophia.
Just going to end on a really light note.
What is your favorite scene you ever did on One Tree Hill?
My favorite scene I ever did?
I love the one with you standing in front of the screen and, like, all the words of, like, people, like, takedowns and, like, words people used to bully you. I like that scene.
That's my favorite, like, emotional scene for sure.
I like the breakup with Lucas.
Which one? Weren't there a bunch?
I know there are a bunch. I mean, there was the one after the wedding where you're mad and taking, like, you're yelling at him.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, that was a good one, too. Oh, yeah. God, I had to cry so hard that day. I gave myself a migraine. I also really loved, in the later years, there was a, just because it became, like, kind of a catchphrase, there was this scene where I kind of, like, went off on Julian and Alex, mm-hmm. and I'm like, you fired, you couch, chow bitches. Like, it was a whole thing. And I just, like, people started saying chow bitches everywhere that year, and I really loved it.
A lot of iconic phrases. Chow bitches.
Yeah, she had good phrases.
Was it you who said, stay out of it, Nick Lachey?
I don't remember.
Or was it Peyton?
I don't know. It might have been her, because I took him as a date to something.
Yes.
Oh, God.
And you girls, you're arguing, and he interjects, and someone says, stay out of it, Nick Lachey.
There was one of us for sure. God.
Paying dust to what's left of me. A good song. Yeah.
Sweet Nick, he was such a good sport on our show. I loved, like, a moment of personal growth for Brooke when she is, like, getting ready to trash Tara's cafe. Mm. And she says, it's some version of, like, I used to be a bitch just for the sake of it, but now I'm a bitch for my family and friends. And it was, like, such a thing where she was like, I'm growing, but I'm still going to come in here and be a nightmare to you. She was just fun.
I mean, CEO, clothes over bros.
You know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here,
Favorite
Sophia.
Position. That was a Lauren Conrad joke, and honestly, she made it on that podcast, and I was like, I did not know you had that sense of humor, and now I'm a fan of yours for life.
When we're back, Dakota Johnson and Ellen DeGeneres.
All right, people, we all know the stakes of the 2024 election are high, whether it's keeping the Senate, taking back the House, or stopping Republicans at the state level. If you're ready to make a real difference, sign up for Vote Save America's 2024 volunteer program.
And just to make it interesting, we're pitting you against each other. Vote Save America will sort you onto a team, east or west, and you'll compete with a community of other volunteers to maximize your impact on the ground with opportunities tailored to you and the causes you care about.
The team with the highest volunteering staff could secure the biggest prize of all, the continuation of American democracy. Head to votesaveamerica.com/2024 now and get ready to organize or else.
This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at votesaveamerica.com, and this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
Guys, it's been a rough year. It's going to get rougher, and you deserve a little treat for not going insane yet. You could head to the local tiki bar and tell the bartender, do your worst. But we have a better idea for you, which is pick out something from the Crooked Store. The store is stocked with tons of new merch. It's perfect for the spring. And classics like the Friend of the Pod tees that you'll be wearing long after the next administration or the next fascist dictatorship, depending on how things go. Pick up a new tee for the warm weather ahead, a mug that'll remind you to stay involved this election year, or a hat celebrating your favorite pod. Go to crooked.com/store to shop.
Last week, while promoting her new movie, Peanut Butter Falcon, which I had no idea existed.
Those are three words that routinely do not go together, and it seems disturbing to pair them.
It sounds like a porn I would love to watch Taron Egerton in.
There you are. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Good reference.
Yeah. Drizzle that gif.
Sick.
Choosy Iris, choose Taron Egerton.
I'm going to leave the room faster than you even think.
But Dakota Johnson stars in this film, and she went on the Ellen DeGeneres show to promote it, and she ended up in one of the most tense Caucasian women situations I have seen outside of Leighton Meester in The Roommate, talking about Hand That Rocked the Cradle. We are talking single white female. The knives were out.
The most painful thing I've ever watched, because I didn't know. Like I said, I couldn't read the room. I had no clue if she was mad at her, if it was, like, contrived. I didn't know. Ellen's mm-hmm. always trying to push jokes forward. It was painful.
It holds up to repeat viewings in this way, too, because mm-hmm. I keep trying to parse the dynamic. Like, what still isn't being said? We'll get into this. Mm-hmm.
To start the interview, Ellen asked about Dakota's 30th birthday party in October and said, out the gate, she came out the gate boxing. How was the party? I wasn't invited.
That's like question one.
Right.
That's really crazy. By the way, like, so this is my industry, right? Like, I work on talk shows. Most interviews are very planned. You know, mm-hmm. like, the questions are written. You know, the anecdotes are, they're given time in advance to basically prepare the anecdote to make them good enough for TV, to make them entertaining. So to start on a discombobulating note such as this, if mm-hmm. in fact she is springing this kind of question on Dakota, is a wild move.
And I feel like maybe they even joked back and forth a bit about it, because, like, yeah, I was prepped before I went on Colbert, you mm-hmm. know, and I feel like they probably had a conversation, like, oh, let's joke about, like, missing your 30th birthday.
Right.
Like, I could believe that that was at least the plan. But then the conversation itself is so awkward, and it makes you wonder, does Dakota want to kill this woman?
Right.
And it makes you wonder, Ellen, are you this bad at your job? Because an interview should not be this awkward.
I bet within the plan they had, her saying I wasn't invited wasn't part of it. Mm-hmm. I bet she added that. That's my guess.
And Dakota immediately shot back, actually, no, that's not the truth, Ellen. A line
put it
for
on
the
my
ages.
Tombstone. Put it on my tombstone. And also, there's something particularly fascinating about the way Dakota Johnson says it, because it's not like a Joaquin Phoenix type mm-hmm. Hostility where it's, you know, broad and obvious and brash.
She is unbothered.
It's, right. Yeah. It is a murmur.
But she also has this, like, blasé innocence to her. She's not, I don't even think she's coming for Ellen
right,
like
it's
that.
Not
she's
provocative.
Like,
yeah.
Like, she's a truth teller. She yes, knows.
You were invited, she said. And she added that she wanted to make sure to invite Ellen because last time I was on the show, last year, you gave me a bunch of shit about not inviting you. But I didn't even know you wanted to be invited, which LOL, because I feel like Ellen would love to be at every celebrity's party, regardless of whether she likes them. She's just that kind of person.
Mm-hmm. I feel like Ellen's life is just in pursuit of another dance floor. She's like, where can I go to impose?
Boogie down.
Yeah.
There's also something about the tone of that sentence in particular where Dakota Johnson's saying, why would you care about me? Like, we normally wouldn't mix, mm-hmm. you know?
I'm 30.
Yeah.
You're Ellen.
You're Ellen. Did you think that you would talk to my mom, Melanie Griffith, there?
Yeah,
would
right. Is it about Melanie?
Would you talk to Don Johnson about Knives Out?
Right. Yeah.
I don't know why Ellen would be at Dakota Johnson's birthday party. That is always a funny thing about celebrity birthdays to me. There's always just a huge guest list, right?
Yeah.
And I'm a person, like, you've been to my birthday, Lewis. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a person who loves inviting a lot of the people that I know and even just friendly with in L.A. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I feel like celebrity parties are full of people who aren't even fucking friends.
No,
you're
right.
Just there because, oh, it's Dakota Johnson's birthday.
It's
Let
a
me
place
go
to
kick
be
it. But I'm like, do y'all kick it?
Yeah. Birthdays are part of the job.
Yeah.
You know, and an essential part of the job, I guess.
And Ellen said, well, who wouldn't want to be invited to a party? And Dakota like laughs it off, saying, I didn't even know you liked me. And Ellen said, of course I like you. You knew I liked you. You've been on the show many times, and I don't show like.
That is a very intimidating thing to say. Also, just
why is she talking like Baby Yoda?
Yeah. Yeah, show
and
like.
I don't show like. Like, what?
Something in Dakota's comment is opening up the possibility that Ellen has a secret list of people she doesn't like or something. So I feel like there's something extra sinister there. Maybe even on accident. Again, is she coming for her? Who can say?
Which is the undercurrent of why this took the internet by storm. We have to mention, of course, that there are many stories from people inside the industry about the fact that Ellen is not nice.
Mm-hmm. And I'm often conflicted about how meaningful that should be to me. Like, I'm not, like, if she were outright rude and toxic, obviously there are problems there. But at the same time, like, for example, this is just the name that's coming to mind. If you heard that Robert Downey Jr. were a complete asshole on whatever the set
yep,
of whatever movie he was
sense.
On, would you care?
No.
I mean, it wouldn't even stay in the headlines. You
and
know
I
what
would
I mean?
Expect him to be an asshole. And I look at Ellen, I'm like, okay, I get that your facade or your personality to the world is I'm a happy-go-lucky, fun lesbian.
Yeah.
But you've been famous since you were, like, 25. I don't expect you to have a rounded-out personality and to understand social cues anymore.
Right.
I really don't.
I would say that I hate people who are assholes in a work environment where they make it impossible for you to work with them.
Oh, totally.
But if she were a fun asshole, like the Constance Wu stuff, I find that funny
and
amusing. But the stories that we often hear about Ellen don't seem in the amusing way.
Right.
So that's why I feel like the internet jumped on this story.
Right. What's happening here is people want something to be confirmed, and they're using this interview to find clues to confirm it.
Yes. And it also ties in with the fact that the date of the birthday party was the weekend that Ellen was with George W. Bush
that is
at the Dallas Cowboys Packer game.
Could it be more perfect?
It couldn't be.
Now, see, that, I'm sure it's just coincidence.
Feels
but
contrived.
But
no,
saying,
I'm right there with you.
Dakota, it's like, that almost feels like a sting.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
I remember in the interview, she looks up at the producer and she's like, well, why didn't I go? You know?
And Dakota says, ask your producer, Jonathan.
Which is a wild, awesome move.
I laughed when she was like, I invited you. Ask everybody.
Yeah. You're
everybody.
Like, you're surrounded, Ellen.
And
your
they're cutting
team.
To producers. And like, yeah, were invited.
You had that thing.
Though it was also interesting because then there was a camera on the producer. Mm-hmm. So that almost makes me think that was planned. Too.
Exactly. Because, yeah.
You know,
you're totally right.
So I don't know, actually, if they were going for a particular, like, you know, a saucy dynamic and it wasn't supposed to trickle into hostility and yet it did. I don't know.
The best part of the interview, I would say, is the second half, which did not get enough circulation. It was when Ellen asks about Tig Notaro performing at the birthday party. And Dakota says, Tig is my favorite comedian, other than you. And Ellen asks, oh, what did Tig do? And Dakota's like, she did a set. She's
right.
A fucking comedian like
what
you.
What do you mean, what did she do?
She blew up balloons, Ellen. I mean, like, what else? Yeah.
Ellen then jabs back with a comment about her favorite actress, Jennifer Aniston.
That's a funny joke. It's fine.
It is. Ellen ain't watching the morning show.
No. Yeah, not at all.
Don't ask her to set up Apple TV Plus. She don't know.
Looking at Jennifer Aniston stare at herself in mirrors and go, okay.
And Reese be named someone named Bradley Jackson.
Yeah.
Which brain cells fall out of your face when you say the name Bradley Jackson.
She is going hard to play a gender-swapped Jackson Maine.
Quite.
In the morning show. It also ends with a clip from a previous episode where Dakota's co-star, Shia LaBeouf, named her as his best on-screen kiss and then said he was lying. And Dakota says, classic. And then they go to a commercial break. The whole thing
Everyone's
felt like
personality.
It felt like an Ionesco play. What is happening?
Right, and was that clip again, when you watch Ellen's Game of Games and you see the joy she takes in sort of, you know, springing someone through the roof or scaring them or whatever, you do wonder if there's an extra bit of joy she gets in keeping people on their toes, so to speak. You know, so when she shows a clip like that to Dakota Johnson, is the intention, gotcha.
Wow. I think we can officially say we're now Dakota Johnson Hive.
Yes. And by the way, I have been for a little while.
Yeah.
First of all, if you've
never
seen...
Not like the crazy fans who love her for 50 Shades specifically.
No.
I like her other presences in film.
It's like a Kristen Stewart situation where she's unfortunately known for the worst thing she's ever done.
Mm-hmm.
And but if you ever watch A Bigger Splash, she's so good in that with Ralph Fiennes. It's a movie directed by Luca Guadagnino, who of course did Call Me By Your Name. And then another Luca Guadagnino movie,
Suspiria,
which I don't love. That movie is too leaden to me.
Can I admit, I actually haven't seen it.
Oh,
because
it's longish?
I know. I love Luca, but I was out of the country when it was released last year. And also, I am such a huge fan of the original Suspiria that it was taking me a moment just to get into it, but I'm going to watch it.
I would describe it as expectedly grotesque. Like, you know what direction it's going in right at the beginning. It's so insane and unfortunately predictably gory. But she, at the center of the movie, at first feels like she's just going to be a cipher and then turns out to run this fucking movie. I would compare it to Vicky Creeps and Phantom Thread in that way, where it's like, wow, you're the bitch in this fucking movie.
That's great. I can't wait to see it.
You will. You'll like it.
When we're back, keep it. And we're back with an all-new segment called Keep It. It's brand new. Never done it before.
Oh my God, I'm so glad we're trying it.
Yes. Lewis, what is your Keep It this week?
This is a almost populist Keep It. There's not a person on earth who wouldn't say Keep It to this damn thing. To that amazing Peloton ad we were all just subjected to the other day. If you haven't seen it, it's just a 30-second normal commercial for Peloton, which is a cult involving riding a bicycle in place. It's like the new Soul Cycle, but you do it at home and instructors sort of end up feeling like your friends or something. It sounds a little scary to me. But okay, anyway, the Peloton commercial works like this. A woman goes home. She already has a frantic look on her face. Something is up with this woman.
She hasn't been exercising.
That's right. It's
every woman who doesn't exercise feels frantic.
There's something, the look in her eyes is, I've eaten the bad berries. That's where we're at. She gets a present from her husband, and the present is an exercise bike. Already the toxicity looms. What's happening here? What kind of relationship is going on? This is unacceptable. She starts riding this damn bike every day. And the look on her face can only be described as, I'm so excited, I'm so excited, I'm so scared from Saved by the Bell. She is a panting, hyperventilating Wolverine on this bike in her like magenta yoga pants. That they start flash forwarding ahead and she's like, I've been doing the bike for 6 days now, like trying to please her husband. And we don't see much of the husband. We don't know how happy he is yet. She keeps pedaling. She keeps pedaling. And then finally at the end, she's like taking selfies of herself on the bike. A rabid animal. This woman is out of control. She hasn't eaten in months. Okay.
She is Brittany Murphy and Don't Say a Word.
Quite. Yes. Quite. Except she's not whispering. She's screaming. Isn't that the movie where she's like, I'll never tell.
I'll never tell.
Right. All she's doing, she is telling in this case and panting. Finally, she like meets her goal for the month or whatever. And she's sitting with her husband who has the faintest look of satisfaction on his face. Not even full out approval. Just like a smile that his wife, one, quote unquote, enjoyed her gift. And two, is now married to this motherfucking Peloton and has no life outside of it. Anyway, it is very toxic. It is, her performance in the commercial is so comedically intense to me while pretending she is having a good time, which is unfortunately very, very hilarious. And I will be watching this with my family over the break when I go home for Christmas. It is a true delight and truly scary. And guys, don't give, I'm going to quote Aaron Gloria Ryan here, just don't give an exercise bike to your spouse. Don't do it. I say no to that.
Aida, what's your Keep It?
My Keep It is specifically for, all my Keep Its end up being for men that have made me mad.
Oh.
But this one is for a dead man, Sir Doc Martin. I'm so irritated. I bought a pair of platform Doc Martens maybe 6 months ago. I've been wearing them every few weeks, I think. I was like consistently for the past few months, and my feet look like the leather on the shoe. Do you
see?
Because the shoes are so constricting. The shoes are so difficult to break in. It takes months and months at a time, and you have to be very consistent about it. And my feet are just now scabbing and scarring and scabbing and scarring over and over again. And I have to wear double socks? It's ridiculous. It shouldn't be this difficult to break in a pair of Doc Martens. I'm wearing double socks. My feet are scabbed. I feel like a chimney sweep. Okay? This is a Mary Poppins-ass pain that I'm feeling for no reason.
That's so, like the hardest rubber imaginable. It's like Boeing airplane tires insanity.
They are. I have a pair of Doc Martens, and they are truly insane to even put on, insane to tie, and clomping around in New York City in them.
Ridiculous
they don't even,
to wear.
They don't even have a good sole to keep you from slipping in the snow. So I really don't know the point in wearing Doc Martens unless you're Daria's best friend.
Yeah.
It's a militaristic Ronald McDonald shoe. That's what it is. If he were headed off to the Marines, he would be wearing this shoe.
It's a utility boot that causes me no utility. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like California doesn't even have earthquakes. We just have a large population of indie kids stomping around in these giant-ass Doc Martens. And that's what the earthquakes actually are.
And yet, what goes better with a pair of hoop earrings than Doc Martens? That is the
true.
Look, ladies and
that's
gentlemen.
Very, very
Take
true.
Me back to 94.
Just keep it. Fix it. Make it. Make something happen. I'm done. I'm done being in pain to look okay. To look mediocre in boots. And then I'm like hobbling around.
I'm worried about your feet. It
you
bothers me.
You really should.
You're trying
be.
Your best over there.
I'm sorry.
Your turn, Ira.
Sorry to these feet.
Sorry to these feet.
My keep it this week is to the ever-growing, never-ending discourse around Queen and Slim.
Speak on it.
If you have not seen or heard of the movie, it is Lena Waithe's new film, directed by Melina Mitsoukas. It stars Jodie Turner-Smith and Daniel Kaluuya, and it is about a black, I want to call them couple, but they're not a couple in the opening because they meet on a Tinder date, and then they accidentally shoot a cop in self-defense and then go on the run. People have called it a version of Bonnie and Clyde. You know, Lena has referred to it sort of as a reverse Underground Railroad because they're traveling to the South to try to escape to Cuba. She's compared it to The Wizard of Oz, which makes sense because there are many points in the film where they are traveling to freedom, and just stop and dawdle. Like, let me ride a horse, or let me ride out the window of my car in moments that really do not make sense. And I would say, though, that I liked 70% of the film. Mm-hmm. I think there's 30% of it that a few ridiculous moments, and also I'm not a huge fan of the ending. Not going to spoil it, but you know, you can assume probably what the ending is going to be. It's a dark movie. I would say that the discourse that's annoying me is on both sides of the aisle. I'm really appreciating writers like Brooke Obie, Angelica Bastion, Clarkeisha Kent, who are writing beautiful reviews of this film. Three black women writing fantastic reviews of this film, critiques that are necessary to read. They're great companion pieces to Carvel Wallace's piece in the New York Times, which is also beautiful, but that is a perspective from a black man. So it's nice seeing them all in conversation with each other, you know? And I wish that we could just have that conversation with one another instead of the one side of people who are saying the film is anti-black and saying like the film deserves to not be made and we should like burn it. And the other side, which is attacking these film reviewers for critiquing a film because it's black art and we shouldn't put each other down. We should all uplift. And I'm sorry, that shit don't make no sense to me.
Not at
yeah,
all.
What does anti-black mean in this case? I don't understand.
Just, you know, because it's sort of like a Black Lives Matter sort of film. And there's a lot of things when you see it are things that would repel some black people and mm-hmm. triggering in some ways that a white audience might not see.
Yeah. I think that also the fear is, I've heard a lot of people critique it and saying that it's black trauma porn.
Mm-hmm.
Like we keep continuing to make slave movies like Harriet, or we keep making movies about black people getting in situations with cops, and we're like, we're
right,
done with
this,
it.
Hate You Give, American Son.
We also need to give black people the space, and I don't think that this movie was bad. I actually really enjoyed this movie. But even if it were a bad movie, we need to give black people the space to make bad movies,
mm-hmm.
to make things that aren't necessarily the correct thing to say in the zeitgeist, because that's how we grow from things. How
mm-hmm.
many times have we seen Nazi films?
Yeah.
White people are allowed to make a million Nazi films, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let us make our cop movies until they're all dried out and we don't have anything else to say about them. But for now, there's still a lot of commentary to be made.
Right.
And also, like, have you noticed the career of Adam Sandler? I mean, how many times has he gotten the sentiments wrong in this lifetime? You know what I'm saying?
You know, I would love to see more black romantic films. There's Atlantics, which is on Netflix. Mm-hmm. See that movie.
Fantastic. I have to see that. I'm so sad I haven't seen it yet.
See that movie. But also, yeah, we need to give Black creators the space to stumble, to make the stories that they want to tell. And I think that that's the way that we keep getting better films. You know, there are plenty of avenues for Black romance, and I hope that we can get them post this movie. I will say that, yes, a lot of complaints were saying that this isn't a love story as it's touted as. You know, it's a traumatic porn story. And I compared it to Beale Street, If Beale Street Could Talk, which I thought was a beautifully romantic film, which also deals with a bit of trauma in the Black community. But even some people don't want any of that trauma in it. They want to just have like a fucking good time, you know? Like, that's why I love movies like Beyond the Lights, you know, or like a Jason's Lyric. And it's reminding me a lot of the Harriet discourse, where people were coming for Casey Lemons without having even seen the movie. And I'm like, we're not going to disrespect the director of East Bayou like that.
Yeah.
Okay, Lewis.
You thought I was going to?
East Bayou. You know, two iconic women in that movie.
It's been forever since I've seen Eve's Bio. I saw it at the time. Like, what is that, 1998? Seven? Yeah.
Well, it has Journey Smollett in it.
Right.
And Megan Good, but I'm talking about Diane Carroll.
Yes, of course.
And
R.I.P.
And Lynn Whitfield.
Another legend.
Yes. In the same movie.
God.
When we can see more of that. If you want to see Lynn Whitfield, you got to tune in to Greenleaf, which is fun. I love Greenleaf. But anyway, that's my keep it. Thanks again to Sophia Bush, and we'll hear you next week. Keep It is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. It's Caroline, like the princess, the one you don't care about. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seguin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Elijah Cohn and Nadine Melkonian, for filming and editing our video content every week.